Well, fall has arrived, which means our insect world is preparing for winter, and so we thought it another good time for an edition of What's Bugging You, our Red River Radio program about the insect world with Dr. Beverly Burden. She is an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. This program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and tonight we invite you to call in with your questions at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind, are welcome tonight. Again, 800-552-8502. And Dr. Burden, glad to have you with us again.
Glad to be back, Bill.
So it seems like fall has come on full roar, but you never know around here. You know, you could have a late summer kick in again. But right now, what's going on in the insect world in our area?
Well, right now, there are many things that are getting ready to overwinter. And this is a time that a lot of people see caterpillars crawling about. They'll be very active this time of the year. And that's because they're looking for some place to hibernate for the winter. And they're looking to crawl in someplace and then go ahead and pupate. Most of the caterpillars will overwinter in the pupal stage because they have a nice external covering, sometimes with a cocoon that adds for insulation as well. Mosquitoes are still out there, so I want to warn everybody about taking proper precaution. We've had a lot of rain, so we may have a lot of standing water around. So make sure that you don't have any standing water around your house, and make sure you wear the proper repellent like DEET if you're going to be outside in any extended period of time. And so those are the major things. The insects are just looking for some place to overwinter right now.
And we had a number of pictures after our last program that were sent in to us. For folks who want to go to our website right now, you can go to redriverradio.org and click on the What's Bugging You post, open it up, and you'll see each of these insects. The first one was sent to me by Kim from Shreveport-Bossier, and it is of a rather colorful-looking spider. Can you give us an idea of exactly what this is?
Yeah, I can, Bill. Ironically, somebody had sent it in last month, too.
Oh, okay.
And so here's that picture, same thing.
Okay.
It's called the Aragope spider, and some people just refer to it as the large garden spider.
Right.
And one of the things that's characteristic about these spiders is when they do build their web, they will have a strengthening area where the silk is very thick and kind of in a zigzag pattern. They're very beneficial insects because they do collect a lot of the pest insects, especially the moths that will lay the eggs, and then the caterpillars will hatch and eat the foliage of our plants.
And speaking of caterpillars, we actually have a couple of caterpillar images. The first one is by Julie Ramsey Campbell from over in the Wascom area. There's actually two photos that she sent of that. One was for scale. It's up against a lighter. So you can see it's about as big as a Bic lighter. So it's a rather long, you know, caterpillar.
And I really do appreciate when they send things, pictures in that have something that like a quarter or something that I can judge the size of it. This caterpillar will eventually turn into what we call the imperial moth. The imperial moth, these caterpillars will be on a lot of trees like basswood and oak. And the adult is a large, one of the largest moths we actually have in this area, not the same size as a lunar moth, which is the largest moth, unless you want to compare it to the black witch moth, but it is a yellow brownish colored adult moth, and rather large in size.
Okay.
And so, if you have a lot of them, they can do some defoliating damage to the trees, but normally their numbers aren't that high.
Now, that one is a little bit fuzzy. So, does it also carry a poison? And should people be, you know, wary of handling it?
Yeah, when I was looking into this, there are actually two different types of external structures on it. Some are very light, kind of like would look like long white hairs.
Right.
And then you have these yellow spikes on it. And when I was looking into this moth for tonight's show, it didn't say anything specifically that it might be, those spines might be toxic, but you always want to err you know, in a conservative way. I tell people all the time that moths come in smooth, or excuse me, the caterpillars come in either a smooth type or a fuzzy, hairy type. And if it's fuzzy and hairy, you certainly do not want to mess with it. In fact, there was a science article on one of the major news networks today about the little pus caterpillar. It's only about maybe a 3/4 inch in length, and it looks very, very, very hairy. And those hairs will embed into your skin, and it has sent some people to the hospital because it's so bad. So just err in caution, you know. I mean, it's a beautiful part of the ecosystem, and if you handle it, you could actually damage the caterpillar. So I certainly wouldn't suggest that anybody pick this up and go with it.
Okay. And how about our next little caterpillar? That looks a lot more fuzzy.
It looks a lot more fuzzy. And it's called the American dagger moth caterpillar. And it is also a pest on a lot of forest trees, ash, including one of them. And it actually comes in two forms. There's a yellow form like we have right here, and then there's also a white form. And so very, very nice caterpillar.
Not poisonous, with all that fuzziness?
I wouldn't touch it.
Okay. Just don't mess with them.
I just don't mess with them.
All right.
You know, I'd rather not know, you know, than know and...
Right.
And harm myself.
Yeah. Not know and be good. We're going to get to our first call. We'll get to the rest of the pictures shortly. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have five lines open right now. But first, our first call, we're going to go to Danielle from Pollock, Texas. Danielle, what's bugging you tonight?
Squash bugs.
Yeah, they're a problem.
Yeah, so my question is, how do I prevent the successful overwintering of squash bugs?
Well, there's a lot of things that that are called squash bugs. Are you talking about the squash vine borer, or are you talking about the squash beetles? Or
so I think I have both. I have vine borers, and I have the little shield bugs, the little stink bug type squash bugs.
Yeah. Those typically overwinter as adults, and so they would look to overwinter in some kind of a debris. And so I tell people it's never a good idea to have your compost pile right next to your garden area. Have it a little bit away because they might be overwintering in that debris. As you know, compost piles generate a lot of heat, and so you would be careful with that. But just clean up any debris around the garden area, and it would help a lot. The leaves, pick up the leaves and just take care of it clean. If you have the squash vine borer, it's probably going to overwinter as eggs. And with those, there's really not much you can do over the winter, but what you can do is next spring when you plant your squash plants, watch when they start to bloom, and then just do weekly sprays of a general permethrin type of a spray, and it may not completely control them, but it will certainly decrease the occurrence.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Danielle.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we have all lines open right now, and you can get right in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we're going to go next to the next image that we have online, which was sent by Shanna Smith in Florida. And it's a rather ominous-looking wasp-like creature. What? It's got a nasty-looking stinger on its back end. What do we got here?
Because of the way the antenna is, it indicates that this might be a spider wasp in the family Pompilidae. And they do, they will take and kill wasps, but they're not the same as the mud daubers that are also called spider wasps.
Okay.
And so these are actually predating on the spiders, where the dirt daubers or the mud daubers are taking the spiders and entombing them in their little mud cases and laying eggs on them so the larvae can eat on the spider as it matures.
So even spiders have their natural predators.
They
out
do.
There.
They do. That's a good way of thinking of it.
Nothing is sacred. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And last but not least, we have a moth-like creature that was taken up in Oklahoma City by Gordon Brown.
Yeah. This is called the banded sphinx moth. Mm-hmm. They're one of my favorite moth groups because they're one of the more robust. Oftentimes, they go by the name of hawk moths because they're such a very strong flyer. Mm-hmm. And they also, some of them, go by the name of hummingbird moths because they have been known to hover like a hummingbird can while it's feeding on the nectar. And they're actually about the same size of a hummingbird. So they're rather large moths as well.
And they have that same skill that the hummingbirds have. I mean, the hummingbirds can just hover right in a spot.
Yep.
I mean,
yeah. And a lot of people think when they see them that they are hummingbirds.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's one of my favorite groups. They're just so majestic.
It's a rather interesting looking moth.
Well, it's one of the easiest way to tell them apart is they will always have that long tapered abdomen.
Okay.
And when you see that and it's a rather robust moth, then you know it's going to be a sphinx moth of some type.
All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and we've got calls online. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502 to get in. We're going to go next to Charlie. Connie and Robbie, please stay on the line. Charlie's next. And Charlie, what's bugging you tonight?
Good evening. I'd like to hear a little bit more about armyworms. In the last month, it was all the panic on social media, but I get the impression that maybe all the panic was overrated and it's just a regular presence here in the East Texas area. Or maybe it isn't. I wanted to hear a little more about it than what I'd heard.
Yeah, there was an explosion about a month ago of armyworms, and you could look out in your yard and it would seem that it was just teeming with them, like the yard was actually moving and it was these armyworms. One of the reasons that they're called armyworms is because they do move about in large numbers, like a big army marching through an area. And like I said at the beginning of the show, this is the time that they are looking for a place to overwinter. Armyworms can be extremely destructive to a lot of our crops, corn, soybeans, and some cotton. And so they're a very versatile type of a moth. And so right now when they're what I call their marches, there's really no need to treat unless they are not moving through the area. If they're staying in the area and eating down the turf, then you want to spray a general insecticide. What I would suggest is you get one that has a BT toxin in it. That's a natural produced toxin that's made by a bacteria called Bacillus thuringiensis, or you can get a regular pyrethrin. And I talk a lot about pyrethrins on this show, so perhaps I should kind of say a little bit something about them. And that is, there are a wide variety of pyrethrins. And they tend to be toxic to insects, but not toxic at all to our pets and other things. But you have to make sure that you get one specific for caterpillars. And so it's going to be BTK. Whereas for flies, it's BTI. And for beetles, it's BTT. But they read the active ingredient, and it'll always end in a suffix known as THRIN. And that way you know you're getting a pyrethrin. Did that answer your question, Charlie?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Connie from Shreveport. Connie, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Hi. Actually, it's another comment about the armyworms. They destroyed most of my horse pasture, and I can certainly spray with pyrethrins, but you talk about overwintering. I would hate for them to come back and destroy the pasture again. With our drought this past year, the hay situation has been dire as well. So having a good pasture is extremely important. So with regards to that, what are your thoughts about, further thoughts about treating the pasture to make sure that they don't continue to decimate what they've already done?
Yeah, that's the problem in large acreages like that. And so it's not really cost effective to go out and do that. What I would suggest that you do instead is you need to monitor the occurrence of them. So you need to walk your pasture, and when you find out that they're starting to come along, and it's pretty easy to distinguish the caterpillar of armyworms because they have these longitudinal stripes down that their back and their body that goes from their head down to their abdomen, and get an early start on treatment rather than a late start. That's what I would suggest. And unfortunately, I wish I had better advice for you, but I don't. We've been battling armyworms for a long, long time.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and you can get right in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Robbie from Shreveport. Robbie, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you?
Hello, doctor. My friend and I, she's a female. We sit outside in the evening and drink a little beer, but she gets ate up by mosquitoes, and I don't get bit at all. What is up with that?
Well, I wish I knew, but there are some chemicals that the mosquitoes will cue off of more than less. It's just the natural oils of the skin. And I'm the same way. I can go out and be bitten by mosquitoes, and they won't even bite my husband, Wally, at all. And then when I do get bitten, they really whelp up. It's almost like I'm allergic to the saliva of the female mosquito. And my best advice is if she doesn't want to wear DEET, which is, a lot of people don't like because it is kind of chemically smelling, that there are some plant oils, cutter, as opposed to off, has an active ingredient called geraniol, G-E-R-A-N-I-O-L. So it ends in O-I-L, just like an, just super busy. And that will probably deter them enough, you know.
She uses, you know, I don't know what brand she uses, but she does spray herself, and she'll still be sitting there going, I just got bit.
Well, maybe she needs to be... Also, if she wears lighter clothing, that might help. If she doesn't like that, then she can use a chemical that the CDC recognizes as Picardian. It's basically a derivative of the pepperine plant, black pepper plant. And wear light clothing, make sure she gets all exposed areas. And that's pretty much the standard answer to how to get control mosquitoes. But... also, make sure that the area where you guys are sitting at doesn't have any standing water. And oftentimes, mosquitoes bite more in the dusk and dawn, and so maybe go out a little bit later and it might help.
I got you. So darker clothing attracts them?
Yes.
Oh. So what if she has dark hair? Would that probably help her?
Well, they're not going to bite the scalp through the hair.
Right.
So that probably wouldn't be an issue at all.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you so much.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Paula from Longview. Paula, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, lately we have found several brown recluse spiders, and I'm concerned with the cold weather coming. Is there anything to discourage them? We can't figure out where they come from. We have the sticky cards, and, you know, they have the delicate legs with the violin marking.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder, is there any way to discourage them? Because spray doesn't seem to help.
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. You would have to spray them directly, but the spray isn't going to be a deterrent. A couple things I'd like to say about this. One, is that this is a good time of the year to make sure that your weather stripping around your doors are very tight. What I tell people all the time is that if you can see light coming from underneath or around a door, then most insects and spiders can get in. But here's the thing about brown recluses. They're not aggressive like black widows are. If you disturb a black widow, she will, attack, basically. But a brown recluse, if it's disturbed, it will retreat. And most of the places that you're going to find a brown recluse, maybe shoes that you haven't worn for a long time, areas in a garage or a bin. Where are you seeing these spiders at, Paula?
In the house, actually, occasionally the mystery is we will find them in the bathroom. I do not know where they're coming from.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times when you find insects in the bathroom, they're attracted to a water source, or they're attracted to insects that might be attracted to the water source, because all spiders are predators. And so just be very careful when you see them. I would suggest that you go ahead and just kill them. But if you don't want to do so, if you take a plastic water bottle or soda bottle, and you cut a portion of it off in order to make it a scoop, then you could actually scoop them right in there, and they can't crawl out of that plastic because they don't have enough traction. I've done that a lot of times. But you might also, look behind pictures hanging on the walls. Sometimes that'll give them just enough, a little edge to hide out there as well. I found them behind those as well. So just be diligent. And like I said, they're not aggressive. And most of the time when people get bit by a brown recluse, it's by accident. They accidentally, like the first time I got bit by a brown recluse, and yes, I said the first time, and you will build up resistance over time, is that I just felt a small prick on the back of my shoulder. And that's because I had gotten an old towel out, and I was cleaning some stuff out behind, underneath the sink. And so I was kind of laying on that towel, and when I unfolded that towel, the little spider was in there. And so if you do have towels that haven't been disturbed in a while, when you get them out, shake them out and things like that.
And sheets and things like
that. Yeah, and just be diligent. Be diligent.
Okay. All right.
Don't move. Don't burn down the house. You can live with them, but oftentimes you'll find one or two and then you won't see them for a long, long time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Great. Well, thank you very much.
They do like wood piles and things like that.
Yeah.
It's in moist wood, underneath the bark and things like that, because that's where I've always found brown recluses.
Well, that's a good point, because people are going to start bringing firewood in.
So you bring a couple of pieces of firewood in that you don't necessarily put on the fire right away. You put it over on the side in the little holder, and there might be up under the bark or something like that, which is what we always found.
And then when you grab it, they'll bite you.
Yeah.
Because they're feeling aggression.
That's why I always handle wood from outside with gloves on. So
it's a very good habit.
Yes. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Ethel from Livingston. Ethel, what's bugging you tonight?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good. What's up?
Thank you for taking my call. I have these potato plants.
Oh, yeah.
They're gorgeous, but they are full of holes, and I can't seem to find out what's eating them, eating on them.
Are the holes like the size of a pencil, or are they the smaller?
About the size of a pencil.
Yeah. It's probably either the Colorado potato beetle, and they are rather large orange and brown beetles with stripes down their back, and you might go out there. And or it could be the immatures of them, too. They'll eat the foliage. And the immatures, the adult beetle is about the size of a dime. The immatures will be much smaller than that. And they'll just look like little orange clumps underneath the leaves. But you got to look underneath the leaves because they're hiding and they're feeding from underneath. If it's not that, it could be a general caterpillar that feeds on potatoes, tomatoes, nightshade. They're all in the same plant family, and they'll feed on anything like that. So, your potato plants are vulnerable. The good thing is even a small amount of foliage damage isn't significant enough to deter the growth of the tubers in the soil. Yeah, I did my postdoctoral research on potatoes, so that's right up my alley, Ethel. Thanks for that. Does that help at all?
Okay, so how do you get rid of them?
Well, there's not very many of them. You can just pick them off and put them in a jar and throw them away, or squish them or whatever you want to, but you have to inspect the underneath of the leaves of the plant in order to catch them. If you had a lot of them out there, you would know it. I mean, they're not completely destroying the plant, are they?
Yeah, it's a lot of the plant, and they have quite a few. But I'm looking under them now, and mm-hmm. I'm not finding. I can't find any evidence. I mean, I can't find any insects of any kind, but I can see the holes.
Yeah, they. A lot of times, if it's the caterpillar that I'm thinking about, they'll feed either at night, and about this time of the day, they will go down into the soil and hide in the soil.
Oh!
But if it's the potato beetle, then you should see them underneath the leaves.
Oh, okay. So it must be the caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not finding any evidence of any bugs. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and we have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502, and we go next to Drew from Shreveport. Drew, what's bugging you tonight? Hello, Drew. Hello, Drew.
Hey, how you guys doing?
All right. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, we have an issue. I'm not sure if they're sugar ants or what. And they're in random places all over the house.
What are they doing?
They're being an absolute nuisance. They will, you know, they don't sting per se, but they do bite. They do sting a little bit, but they're not like a fire ant bite or anything.
Are you seeing trails, or are they aggregating in clumps?
A little bit of both, okay. Actually. And like I said, like they'll be randomly on the kitchen floor where there's, you know, where we swept them off the previous night, and they're just randomly all over one spot. Or we'll see them randomly on a wall somewhere.
Would you describe them as small, medium, or large?
They're small.
Very small.
Yes, ma'am.
Probably what you're talking about is called the little black ant, or is it more tan in color?
I think they're very black. They seem to be black anyway.
Yeah, and they're actually called the little black ant. And the one thing you need to do is find out where their nest is. But if they're randomly placed, that may not be very easy. if they're not causing a big problem, I would just vacuum them up and then store the vacuum outside in the garage or something like that, and so they don't come back out of the bags. And unless you can track ants back down to their nest, it's very, very hard to control them. The other thing, since they're random, that's going to cause a problem. Sometimes I tell people, if they know that they're always on a certain windowsill, you can take petroleum jelly. And you can, and they won't cross that. And you can like make a little bridge or a little wall, and that'll stop them from entering those areas.
Okay. What we did try is we bought some ant bait.
Uh-huh.
And we clip it, and basically, I'm guessing they just go inside and take a little bit of it, and they take it back to their nest. But we found trails of them going to it, but it didn't really seem to deter them.
Well, not ants are susceptible to ant baits, and baits is kind of a iffy, and you could also use the glue pads, but if they're random, that doesn't help you either. And so I would just deal with them. You know, people ask me all the time, when are the insects going to take over the world? And my answer is that they already have. They just allow us to live here with them.
Yes,
and so, and you know, it probably won't continue very much longer, because they'll start to slow down in overwinter.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and we have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502, and we'll go next to Susan from Dallas. What's bugging you tonight?
Just a question, actually. When I was a little kid, a really long time ago, I lived north of Tyler in Lindale on a place with really sandy soil, and I remember seeing what looked like a migration of ticks. Dozens and dozens and dozens of them all together heading in one direction, and they didn't seem interested in crawling up my feet or didn't seem hungry or anything. And I had never heard of such a thing or seen that, and I just wondered if that was common.
Are you sure they were ticks?
I remember being 100% sure. We were always pulling them off our dogs and ourselves.
Okay.
If you live out in the country, you get used to them.
Yeah, you do. I've never heard of that either, Susan. And ticks normally don't aggregate like that at all. And so I'm going to have to say you got me on that one. But
maybe spiders or?
They could have been spiders, but if you know what a tick looks like, then there's not much else looks like a tick.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I have no idea. And it was out in the country, so, you know, let them do their thing.
Yeah. Well, that was just interesting. Had never heard of that. If you have another second, I have one more question.
Sure.
I know there's places in our yard and garden where water can accumulate just in the soil and in certain plants that we have, and we are always fighting a mosquito problem. If I put down cedar shavings, does that help? Does that have any effect on mosquito control?
No, it doesn't. I wish I could say it does, but it does not.
Oh.
You know, and well, what you could do is you can go to the store and buy something that's called mosquito dunks, D-U-N-K-S. And they look like little donuts. And if you have standing water, you can put those little donuts in there, and it's a time-release insecticide that's only active against mosquitoes. And it's actually, it goes back to something I was talking before. It releases a toxin that's produced by the bacteria Bacillus thuringiensis. But the bacteria isn't there, just the toxin, just the poison that the bacteria produce. And that's a slow release over time. And people use those a lot if they have like little koi ponds or, you know, other little ponds that they like to have in their yard.
Okay. Well, that helps. Thank you very much.
All right. So migrating ticks sounds like the premise of a good sci-fi movie. So.
Yes.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we've got quite a few calls online right now. We're going to go next to Lisa from Hall's Summit. Lisa, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Yes. I have a purple hull pea patch. And I have some bugs that are in there. They're little bugs. You can see them. They're like neon orange, the whole bug, and the legs of them are black. I've sprayed them with Seven Dust. I've dusted them with Seven Dust. I've ortho. I cannot kill these bugs, and I'm trying to find out what kind of bugs these things are.
Yeah, they're you're seeing the immatures. I'm assuming that they're probably about the size of a cooked grain of rice.
Yeah, about that size.
Uh-huh. And they're the immatures, and they are feeding on the plant. So what you might want to do is get you something that's called a systemic. And one good systemic is the active ingredient is going to be imidacloprid. That's imidacloprid. It'll end in PRID. And you basically pour that in the ground. The roots of the plant suck it up. And then when they feed on the juices of the plant, it's like drinking poison to them.
Okay.
Because if you try, you know, topical, you know, spraying them with stuff, that's not working. And so,
yeah, that's not working.
You know, I mean, if you try Seven Dust, that's one type of chemical insecticide. Ortho, again, you always need to look and read the active ingredient. I can't express that as much. If it ends in THRIN and it's not working, then don't go back and get another active ingredient that's a pyrethrin that ends in THRIN.
Okay.
Now, you tried
and
Seven
it's like,
Dust.
It's like they line up.
on a leaf or a stem, all in one big line, like they're all connected.
Yep, they'll do that, and they're just sucking your purple hull pea plants, sucking all the juice out of them, and that's going to severely reduce your production in those plants. And so try a systemic where the plants take it up from the root, and that perhaps works. If it doesn't, then you need to either contact me, just go onto the LSUS website and just search for Beverly Burden, or you might want to go ahead and take some samples down to your local agricultural extension agent, and they might, by looking at them and getting a visual, they might be able to help you a little bit more.
Okay, because this is the first time I've ever seen these kind of bugs, and it's just baffled me what kind they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll try that, and if not, then I will try to get back in touch with you.
One more question: have you tried malathion?
Yes, I've tried that.
Okay,
that hasn't worked either.
Okay, well, you've tried all the stuff that I would tell you to try, except for the systemics.
Okay, all right.
Imidacloprid.
Okay, all right. I'll try that and see if that'll work.
Yeah. You gotta put it in the ground.
Okay, put it on the ground.
Well, follow the instructions. That's what I need to say. Always follow the instructions on the insecticide label, and it will tell you how to apply it and how much to apply it.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Good luck, Lisa. I do like my purple hull peas, too.
Oh, yes, ma'am, I do, too.
All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have four lines open at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind, is welcome. And we go next to the last caller that we have lined up right now, which is, if I can find it here, well, can't really find it. I think Bill from South Bossier. Bill, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Well, three different problems. One of them makes it summertime miserable from about the end of April until about now. Is chiggers. I've used sulfur, dusting sulfur. I literally use a fan to blow it out and make it a cloud of sulfur. And, of course, I have to take care of myself and breathing and stuff. But unfortunately, it also kills beneficial insects.
Mm-hmm.
But it still does not get – I mean, we got a serious chigger problem. Now, if you can suggest something, but I got two other things I wanted to ask. On fire ants, I've tried using white cornmeal to spray, sprinkle around the mounds at either morning very early or late in the evening while they're dormant. And that, I would say, works about 50% of the time, or do you think that's just don't worry about it, that's not going to help? I prefer not to use chemicals if possible. And last but not least, for about a year now, we had an infestation of moths. Now, these are not the wool-eating moths. These are little bitty guys that are about a half inch long. They are gray to light brownish or rust colored. They'll come out basically at night. Sometimes they'll be out during the day. Like you'll be watching TV and all of a sudden here they come. Well, you go over to turn on the light and it's like they've disappeared, the ghost moths. Now, what I did, I made up a solution of 91% alcohol, peppermint, and a little few drops of dishwashing liquid to hopefully coat their leaves. And it seems to be okay, but you have to spray them. It'll knock them down, and then you have to spray them again, or else they'll literally get up and fly around. We did find out they were getting into some bird seed that we had stored inside the house, unfortunately. Got rid of that. But they are still multiplying. We cannot figure out their food source. We found out where they normally lay their eggs are on umbrellas. We have about six or eight umbrellas. You know, you have a lot of umbrellas. Well, we found out about that. Well, it took me a while to wash all these umbrellas off. Still got the moths. Now, I know I've given you three things all at once, but I hope you can help me.
Okay, let's start off with number one, the chiggers. Chiggers are small mites that will feed on the body fluids that's in your skin tissue. And normally, about the time you figure out you have a chigger problem, they have already fed and dropped off the body. So a lot of these wives' tales of putting clear fingernail polish on it, that really doesn't work. The problem that most people have when they have a chigger problem is that they have a lot of tall grass around their house somewhere. And so you need to keep the vegetation under control. Do you have any tall grass in your yard?
Well,
or maybe your neighbors do?
We live out in the woods. Now, we do have some grass in the yard, but I'm guessing they're probably about 50 by 50 front and back. And I do keep it mowed.
Yeah, you have to take care of the brush and the tall grass, and that will significantly help you with your chigger problem. And other than that, you can actually DEET, regular mosquito repellent, will work well on chiggers as well. And chiggers like to get around waistbands, around socks, and so wearing loose-fitting clothing might help a little bit with that as well.
Normally, if I have to go outside to work, I do tape up my boots. I, you know, wear long sleeve shirt.
Yep.
Tape up my arms. Wear something else. Do, you know, long sleeve shirt. But I dust myself with sulfur. Well, of course, you know, you don't want to do it too much because it'll eventually get to your skin. But I literally, as soon as I get through with what I'm doing, go back in and take a shower. But invariably, I'll get two or three of them, which are extremely irritating. You know, it takes about 2 weeks for the itches to go away. I'm more sensitive to insects than other people. But I just thought maybe you might have something else. Because the other thing about the sulfur, it's not too cheap. And if it rains, you've lost all the properties
right.
of being able to kill the chiggers.
Yeah. So that's I would actually start wearing DEET, and that's going to help you more than anything. About the fire ants, forget the white corn meal. They've done test and test and test, and that is not an effective way. And let me explain to our listening audience. The theory is that they eat the corn meal grains, little pieces of cornmeal, and it gets into their digestive system, and it absorbs fluid, and it basically blocks their digestive system, that it swells up, the cornmeal does. The other thing I would discourage you from using is don't go out there with hot water and put it on the mounds. That's harmful for the vegetation that's growing around them. You can also use, there are some fire ant baits, and it is a chemical, and but what I do at my house, I do mound treatments. Whenever I see a mound, I will take, and the active ingredient is acephate, A-C-E-P-H-A-T, and it's made by the Ortho Company, and just a few little sprinkles of that, less than you would put dry creamer in your coffee is enough to shut them down. Now, here's the problem with fire ants, Bill. A lot of people say, well, you just kill one mound and they move. They do not move. If you kill that mound is killed. But what you don't realize is that there are many other little mounds in your yard that's being suppressed by the main colony in that one mound. And then when they're gone, then they're no longer suppressed and they'll pop up other places in the yard. And so all right. I want to dispel that myth as well. Now, moths at night. I've got this one nailed down for you. There is a little moth, exactly as you described it, called the Mediterranean meal moth. And it will feed on any dried organic matter. The seeds, the bird feed seeds, I get those in my bird feed all the time. But I've also found them in my pantry. And so go through everything in your cupboards. It might be beans. They got into my beans, my dry beans one time.
We did that. And we tried to clean them out as best we could, trying to get rid of any kind of traces of them. But
yeah.
Invariably, we still got them.
Yeah.
Normally, what'll happen, originally we had 12 to 15 moths at one time would be flying around, then you could easily see those. But now it'll happen, like, let's say if I go home right now, there'll probably be three or four of them that'll make your nighttime miserable, especially yeah. if you're trying to watch football or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they really insult you whenever you're trying to sleep, and all of a sudden one flies across your face while you're trying to watch something or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They don't land on you, but it's so bizarre how you'll see them fly as soon as you get up and turn on the light. It's like they've disappeared.
Yeah, that's because they're so hard to see, with the enough light. But I can guarantee you, Bill, there is still a feeding source for them somewhere in the house. Okay. It could be something as simple as you know,
dog food,
you know, any kind of dried organic matter, food material they could be feeding on. And you probably have found most of the sources, but you haven't found them all. Because as soon as you find them all, also, if you can remove the shelving, because they will pupate, you know, behind boards and things like that. And they've got to be in there somewhere.
Okay.
And in order to prevent them from coming back, what you need to do is when you bring home flour or any kind of dried material like that, put it in the freezer for a couple of days, because they may be coming in from, you know, where you shop for your food. And immediately take them out of any plastic. They can chew right through Ziploc bags, but you have to put them in hard, store your stuff in hard, like Rubbermaid or Tupperware type of units. And that will be a huge deterrent as well.
Okay, well, we do try to store our things in the freezer, you know, just for that fact.
Yeah.
Besides, hopefully it'll last longer. Well, I really appreciate your information. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next. We've got Jacob on hold. Please stay on the line, Jacob. And Greg is next. What's bugging you tonight, Greg?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, we've had a problem with case-bearing moths before, and they infested the house pretty bad. And they did a lot of damage to some very nice wool carpeting until we discovered what was going on. And we eradicated them as best we could. They do come back from time to time. So really, two questions, unless the doctor can expand on it. Number one, what has brought them to our house? What do they find attractive about our carpet as opposed to somebody else's? And how can we keep them out? I mean, when we find them, we can spray them with, you know, moth killing spray that I picked up from the local Ace Hardware store. But help me out on those two things. What's bringing them in, and how can I keep them out?
There's nothing that's actively bringing them in. It's a random thing, and you just have to happen to be on the wrong side of the odds, okay? What's keeping them there? That's the question. And normally, they will not feed on anything that has synthetic material threads in it. But if you have almost pure wool carpets or jackets or Angola sweaters, everything like that, then that's what they're feeding on. And it's unique that they are case-bearing, because that's is rather unique, but they do occur. And the best thing I can tell you is inspection, and keep vacuuming. That'll control them too.
Yep. When we went online to study up on them, that's what they said to do. Unfortunately, these guys are pretty smart little boogers. They will make their way under couches.
Oh yeah.
They'll make their way under a chest of drawers. And when we finally realized we were under siege and started moving furniture around, you wouldn't imagine the amount of damage these things did. I mean, they ate a bunch of carpet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You might also try putting down some of the scented carpet cleaners, and that might be a deterrent for them too. But yeah, just those of you that have natural carpet like that, that's just going to be a risk. But inspection. Keep very vigilant on making sure you're looking for them.
Okay, I'll keep an eye out for them. Thank you so much.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have four lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Our last caller online is Jacob from Nacogdoches. Jacob, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I'm calling from Nacogdoches. Thank you very much. But yeah, let me tell you, and first of all, Dr. Burden, it's an honor. I love your show.
Jacob.
But I just became chair of my HOA's grounds and maintenance committee, so I'm trying to get literate with plants and insects. And, you know, I have these Sasanquas, and there's something is eating them alive that regular insecticide isn't getting. And this lady, a neighbor said, oh, it's bagworms. And I did some research on bagworms. I don't even know if it is bagworms, but because this lady also thinks, you know, Bigfoot and Sabine Parrish. But I have noticed these like little cocoons under the eaves of some of our houses. Mm-hmm. And she says that that's a bagworm and that's what is eating them. But I've also done some research and I don't know where I am in their season and life cycle to treat it.
Yeah,
that's the case.
If it is bagworms, let me try to describe this and let's make sure that what you have are bagworms. They normally will feed on anything in the cypress or juniper family. I'm not familiar with the type of plant that you mentioned, but they go ahead.
It's a kind of like it's of the azalea rhododendron family.
Okay. But they'll take small twigs or small pieces of pine needles, and they will secrete a silk and basically use these and the little caterpillars over winter in those. But it's also a protective. They will stick their heads out of their bag and attach it onto whatever they're feeding on, and away they go. And I tell you what, I have tried diligently to be able to dissect them out of those bags, and it's almost impossible to do unless you have a good pair of micro scissors to do that. The adults are moths, and what you're probably going to end up doing, you've used sprays like, you know,
Seven.
Yeah, stuff like that. Earlier, I was talking to a lady, Lisa, with her Purple Hull pea. Did you hear that? You might be able to apply a systemic, like imidacloprid, on them and see if that works. But also, just do some research on bagworms. Is what I described basically what you have?
Well, I mean, I don't even know, but I'm trusting that they are bagworms because nothing's treated. Nothing can be that I've been using has been, you know, abating the problem. And this lady did say that it's not going to stop them, but the bagworms, they talked about, the research said it depends if they're out yet or what stage of they are, but I don't see anything on the leaf. I thought it was like a moth coming out at night. That's what a bagworm eventually becomes. And I'm thinking we're in the adult season now, maybe.
No, they actually overwinter in those little cases because it's a nice little home for them. And do me a favor, though, Jacob, take a picture and send it to me on my email. And my email is beverly.burden@lsus.edu. It's on the webpage, so it's no secret. And I will get back to you. And it might also be a topic that we want to come forth in the spring and talk about then, because I think this will be the last What's Bugging You for the winter, and then we'll come back next spring, and we'll try it then. But email me a picture of one of those things, and we can continue this conversation.
Okay, thank you so very much. So the bagworm, literally, it's going to go away for the winter since we're now in the fall.
It will stop eating in the winter, but it won't go away.
Right. But boy, they're skeletizing these things so darn quick.
I know. They can do a lot of damage if the population is high enough. It's crazy.
Well, thank you so very much, Doctor. I certainly will. I'm going to do that.
Thanks for your call, Jacob.
Thanks.
You bet. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have one more caller online, Nick from Shreveport. What's bugging you tonight?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a question on, I've got a live oak tree that's out in front of the house, a small live oak. And I've noticed for the last 3 or more weeks, there's been red wasps all over the tree. There's also bees and some other kind of wasps on there, but in particular, there's red wasps that are clinging on to the acorns, the little acorns, and they're also fighting each other. And I'm seeing, you know, upwards of 50 wasps in this small tree. Never seen anything like it before.
Oh, and it's a small tree, you say? It's like a sapling?
Well, no, it's not that small. It's probably 35 feet tall.
Okay. Well, first of all, red wasps are predators. In fact, all wasps are predators. And so all wasps that you would know about are predators. You know, there are some that are plant pests as well, but they're itty-bitty, teeny, little bitty ones. But they must be attracted to this tree for some reason. Are you seeing any insects or spiders up in the tree?
I haven't noticed spiders, but I do notice that some honeybees and a few other, some of the other black wasps, maybe some dirt dodgers or something like that.
There's absolutely no reason that the honeybees would be attracted to a live oak, because there's no right now it's not flowering, and so there's no pollen together there, and that's what the honeybees need. And so, you know, if they're not bothering you, just leave them alone. And normally what you would call the red wasp or the mahogany wasp are not at all aggressive unless you mess with them. And
they're never in a good mood.
Well, just don't mess with them, Nick. You know, don't be messing with them.
I mean, I just walk up and look at them, trying to figure out what they're doing on the acorn.
I'd like to know too.
And look at me like they're about to attack me because I'm getting too close. So.
Yeah. Just leave them alone. In a couple of weeks they'll be gone. Okay. Thanks for your call, Nick.
Thanks.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We've got time for one more quick call. Susie from Nacogdoches, you're online with Dr. Burden. State your question very quickly, please, if you could.
Yes, sir. Just saying that neem oil works well on bagworms.
Oh, that may be, yeah. Neem oil is the chemical agent is called azadirachtin, and it's from the neem tree. And if you Google neem, you'll find out that it's good for almost everything, including acne. But there's a lot of things that they claim neem oil can do that it can't do. But it is known to be a good natural insecticide, and I really appreciate that point. That's an excellent call, Susie. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you, and good night.
All right, and just one last thing. You had mentioned before the show that we have the crepe myrtle scales on campus. So crepe myrtle fans out there, you might need to know about this.
Yeah, on the LSUS campus, we have over 300 crepe myrtle trees on our campus. And I've noticed on a few one, what you'll be seeing, it'll look like little small white scabs. And that is also treated by a systemic, the imidacloprid. And what I'm also seeing on the trees are little things that are called mealybugs. On the crepe myrtles are little things called mealybugs. And they look like a roly-poly, except they're a little bit flattened, and they're completely white. And so you'll see white things crawling around, and then the white scabs that don't crawl around. Right now, they're in the egg stage. But monitor that over winter, and come spring, you might want to treat for crepe myrtle scale. There's a lot of information online that you can go in and read up on those.
All right. So take a look out there and see if you see those out there. Dr. Burden, I want to thank you very much for joining us again for What's Bugging You.
Thank you, Bill, and thank for all the callers.
You bet. You have been listening to Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and Red River Radio's resident entomologist. The program is called What's Bugging You, made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Be sure to join us on Tuesday, November 13th at 6 p.m. for the next edition of Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett with assistance from Wally Derleth, Sheila Lawrence, Tim Schnell, and Susan Fletcher. Dr. Burden, again, is our resident entomologist, and I'm your host, Bill Beckett. This has been a production of Red River Radio, and we are KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA Alexandria Pineville, KBSA El Dorado Magnolia, and KLDN Lufkin Nacogdoches. Stay tuned. Radio Lab is coming up next here on Red River Radio.